This is a WGNS Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman of the monthly District Attorney Show.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS. We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-hosts today are Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime, and we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
I like water aerobics.
Margaret Ordobadian chose Adams Place.
It's been a great boon for my health to have water aerobics. The pool is saltwater pool, and the instructors are all geriatric trained.
And then they have stretch and balance to help you keep from falling.
I'm Terry Deal. Call me for more information about Adams Place, 1927 Memorial Boulevard.
Call Adams Place today at 615-904-9111.
Broadcasting to every nook and cranny of Rutherford County's 618 square miles. FM 100.5, 101.9, and AM 1450. This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones, and today I will be your tour guide through this episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in any upcoming trials or hearings have been convicted, and they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On October the 13th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call for shots fired at a residence on Las Casas Pike in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered Mr. Jaleel Turner lying unresponsive on the floor of his apartment, suffering from a gunshot wound to the abdomen. Mr. Turner later died from his injuries. Detective William Pullius was assigned as lead investigator. On scene was Mr. Turner's girlfriend, Miss Shakira Brown. Miss Brown lived at the residence with Mr. Turner. After the collection of evidence on scene and a subsequent interview of Miss Brown, she was charged with second-degree murder of Mr. Turner. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Brent Horst, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. This matter is scheduled for appearance in the General Sessions Courts of Rutherford County on December 2nd of this year. On October 27th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to an emergency assist where a man identified as Harold Cruz had sustained injuries to the head. Mr. Cruz was awake but unable to respond to questions. He eventually slipped into a coma and later died from his injuries. During the investigation, video footage was located which showed Mr. Cruz sleeping behind a convenience store close to where he was later found. While sleeping, an unknown individual approached Mr. Cruz, shook him awake, and then struck him in the head with a large rock. Detective Matthew Coe was assigned as lead detective. The investigation led to other videos being obtained from nearby stores, which allowed detectives to identify Mr. Clinton Johnson as the person that had attacked Mr. Cruz. Mr. Johnson was located and interviewed and admitted to attacking and robbing Mr. Cruz. Mr. Johnson has been charged with first-degree murder. On January 24th of this year, Mr. Johnson appeared before the General Sessions Court of Rutherford County and bound his case over for presentation to a grand jury. In August of this year, the grand jury indicted Mr. Johnson for first-degree murder and aggravated robbery. Mr. Johnson is represented by the Office of the District Public Defender, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. Between January 21st and July of 2022, Ryan and Amy Koss, who are husband and wife, operated a business called Cornerstone Pools and Service. The couple obtained contracts with four different families in Rutherford County, and each contract was over $40,000. Each contract required a down payment, and two families had paid a second large payment on a second contract that was presented to them. No work was performed by the defendants, but the defendants transferred the money out of their business account and into their personal account and then spent the money. The defendants also filed for bankruptcy during this time and were unsuccessful at discharging their debts. The defendants operated this business and negotiated contracts at a threshold level that required them to be licensed as a general contractor in the state of Tennessee. They held no such license. The loss sustained by the victims in this case was more than $60,000. Detective Stephen Lewis with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office was assigned as the lead investigator. In July of 2023, a sealed indictment was returned by the Rutherford County Grand Jury against the defendants for offenses of theft over $60,000 and criminal impersonation of a licensed professional. On August 25th of this year, a jury trial began, and on August 29th, a jury of their peers found the defendants guilty as charged in both counts of the indictment. A sentencing hearing is scheduled for November 3rd of this year. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Tammy Reddig and Andrew Hazley. The defendants were represented by counsels Billy Zimmerman for Amy Koss and John Drake for Ryan Koss. A trial is scheduled to begin on February the 2nd of 2026 on Candace Davis for allegations of second-degree murder, employing a weapon during a commission of a dangerous offense, and employing a firearm. The defendant is represented by counsel, Mr. Will Fraley, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. A trial is scheduled to begin on March 20th of 2026 on Cameron Jordan for allegations of second-degree murder, reckless endangerment, tampering with evidence, employing a firearm during a dangerous felony, and unlawful possession of a weapon. The defendant is represented by counsel Mr. Derek Howard, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. And that will conclude this episode of Our Look Inside the Courts.
Broadcasting from the tallest tower in the city with that little red light on top. FM 100.5, FM 101.9, and AM 1450.
Bigger isn't always better. When it comes to your financial institution, don't send your money to some far-off bank in another state. At Heritage South Community Credit Union, we help when others won't. We've been serving our community since 1957 and are still locally owned and operated in Middle Tennessee. If you're tired of talking to artificial intelligence and computer screens and branches, give Heritage South a try. Learn more at heritagesouth.org. Insured by NCUA.
Hi, Murfreesboro. This is Amanda from Animal City. We're at 919 Northwest Broad Street. Come in and see us. If you've already found your best feline friend, we carry all of their favorite things here at Animal City. Whether it's scratching posts, toys, or premium quality food, you will find it with us. Come in and see us. We are so proud to be Murfreesboro's pet destination for 35 years. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street. Family owned and operated.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
What's the law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Good morning, listeners, and thank you for joining us today on this episode of What's the Law? Today, we are going to be joined by some very special guests. We have four law students from various law schools across the state, and they're going to be telling you a little bit about themselves and introducing a segment of What's the Law? Today, I'm going to pass it over now to Cole Albright.
I'm a rising 2L student at Belmont Law. My name is Colton Albright, and I'm originally from Dublin, Ohio, and I received my bachelor's degree in political science from Ohio University. I began law school with zero idea on which area of the law I would end up practicing in, but I've always had an interest in criminal law, and I've been enjoying gaining some valuable experience in that field so far this summer. Outside of work, I'm most likely hanging out with some friends, reading, cooking, and occasionally diving into new hobbies just to see what sticks.
I'm Zach Willett, a rising second-year student at Belmont Law. I'm from right here in Murfreesboro, and I studied history at MTSU. I began law school with the hope of eventually practicing as a public defender, but here I am as an intern with the DA. My plan remains intact for now, but we'll see how much longer it takes for the charming group of attorneys with the 16th Judicial District to rub off on me. I'm a lifelong hockey player, a history buff, a fan of opera, and I make a mean braised beef. When I'm not reading and writing for law school, I like to read and write. With gratitude to the station and its listeners, here's Jenny.
Hi, my name is Jennifer LaRue. I'm originally from New York before I moved to Florida. I went to undergrad at the University of Florida, where I studied political science, and now I'm a rising 2L at Vanderbilt Law. I first became interested in being a lawyer, and specifically a prosecutor, after I took a 7th grade civics field trip to our local courthouse to watch a round of mock trial. After that, I was in love, and I continued doing mock trial all throughout undergrad, and I still do it today here at Vanderbilt Law. When I'm not studying at the library, I'm attempting to recreate an Italian dish from one of my Nona's recipe books.
Hey everyone, my name is Parker Gasway, and I'm a rising 3L at Belmont Law. I grew up in Smithville, Tennessee, and I graduated from Lipscomb University in 2022. I'm interested in criminal law, which is why I'm here working with the district attorney's office. I decided to intern here because I wanted to gain valuable courtroom experience where I'll be able to participate in some court proceedings while under direct supervision thanks to my limited license. When I am not in class, I like staying busy, whether that means watching sports with friends or getting a workout in. I also really enjoy going to concerts and discovering new artists. No matter what I'm doing, I always enjoy learning more. That includes learning more about what the law is. With that, let's talk about Tennessee Code 3917-1307. Tennessee Code 3917-1307, Sections B and C, address the unlawful possession of firearms by individuals with certain prior convictions or under specific legal restrictions. In other words, in Tennessee, it is a felony offense for a convicted felon to possess a firearm. Under Section B, if a person has been convicted of a felony crime of violence, an attempt to commit a felony crime of violence, or a felony involving the use of a deadly weapon, it will be classified as a Class B felony. If a person has been convicted of a felony drug offense, it will be classified as a Class C felony. Finally, under Section C, it is an offense for a person who possesses a handgun and has been convicted of a felony, and this is a Class E felony. The types of felony classes can significantly change the punishments for these crimes. For instance, a Class A felony has the harshest punishments, while a Class E felony has the lightest punishments. For example, a Class B felony carries a range of 8 to 30 years in prison, although this depends on how many offenses a person has. For first-time offenders, a typical prison sentence would be about 7.2 years. Additionally, the maximum fine of a Class B felony is $25,000. Likewise, a Class C felony carries a sentence range of 3 to 15 years, and the maximum fine is $10,000. Finally, a Class E felony carries a sentence range of 1 to 6 years, and the maximum fine is $3,000. Additionally, there is an amendment that will take place on July 1st, 2025, that will make an offense to unlawfully possess firearm and handgun ammunition. This is outlined in Tennessee House Bill number 1093. Tennessee Code Annotated 3911-106 provides a definition for firearm and handgun. According to the statute, a firearm is any weapon designed to, or that can readily be converted to, expel a projectile by explosive action, including its frame or receiver, a muffler or silencer, or any destructive device, but does not include an antique firearm. A handgun is any firearm with a barrel length of less than 12 inches that is designed, made, or adapted to be fired with one hand. These statutes seem simple, right? Except the statute leaves so many questions open for interpretation. What happens when the previous felonies stem from out-of-state convictions? Does it matter if these convictions would have been felonies here in Tennessee? How should a defendant be indicted under the statute if they have violated multiple provisions of it by a single act? How does double jeopardy interact with those multiple indictments? I will now give the floor to my fellow interns to answer these questions.
First, what happens when previous felonies come from out-of-state convictions? If the person possesses a firearm under Section 3911-106, then they must have committed a crime of violence or a felony drug offense. Tennessee Code Annotated Section 3917-1301 provides a specific list of offenses that qualify as crimes of violence. These include aggravated assault, aggravated robbery, and other serious felonies. With an out-of-state crime of violence conviction, Tennessee courts must determine if the elements of the out-of-state offense match the elements of a Tennessee offense classified as a crime of violence. In the case of State v. Vick, the court emphasized the necessity of comparing the elements of the out-of-state offense to Tennessee law. Tennessee Code Annotated Section 3911-110 defines a felony as any violation of law punishable by 1 year or more of confinement. The definition of felony determines whether an out-of-state conviction constitutes a felony drug offense. Regardless of the classification system used in the other state, courts in Tennessee apply this definition to see if the out-of-state conviction qualifies as a felony drug offense. For example, in State v. Smith, the court held the definition of felony under Tennessee Code Annotated Section 3911-110 controls the determination of whether an out-of-state conviction qualifies as a felony drug offense. In that case, the out-of-state conviction was from Indiana, and their state law may punish the crime for up to 3 years. So the defendant's prior conviction was a felony drug offense under Tennessee law. Additionally, Tennessee Code Annotated 4035-106 says, if a felony is not named in Tennessee law, the elements are used to determine where it would be classified in Tennessee law. If the person is unlawfully possessing a handgun and not a firearm, they would just need to have a felony according to Section 3917-1307. And so Tennessee Code Annotated Section 3911-110's definition of felony would apply.
Sometimes a person suspected of unlawful possession of a firearm has several prior felony convictions. The question arises, can the state charge such a defendant with multiple counts of unlawful possession of a firearm based on just one instance of possession? In State v. Hart, the Tennessee Court of Criminal Appeals for the Western Division considered exactly that scenario. The defendant there had three prior felony drug convictions and got caught possessing a gun. The state charged him with three counts of unlawful possession of a firearm, one for each prior felony. The court held that the state may charge a defendant with a separate count of unlawful possession for each prior felony, as each prior felony represents an alternative theory by which they could secure a conviction. But that doesn't mean the state can actually punish the defendant for each of those charges. To reach that decision, the Hart Court determined the unit of prosecution under the relevant statute. That just means they had to figure out what the legislature intended to be a single unit of conduct that corresponds to a single punishment. The court ruled that the legislature intended that defendants receive one punishment per instance of unlawful possession of a firearm, rather than per prior felony. Thus, the three charges had to merge into one to avoid trying the defendant multiple times for the same criminal act. The legal term for this is double jeopardy. Because the unit of prosecution was per instance of possession instead of per prior felony, and the defendant was only accused of one instance of possession, punishing them multiple times for that one instance would constitute double jeopardy. So, to reiterate, the state can bring multiple charges for unlawful possession according to the number of applicable felonies on the defendant's record, but they can only convict according to the number of distinct instances of unlawful possession with which the defendant is charged.
To bring it all together, in Tennessee, it is a felony offense for a convicted felon to possess a firearm. What counts as a felony when considering out-of-state convictions depends on whether the prior offense was a crime of violence or a felony drug offense, unless the firearm in question was a handgun. Crimes of violence utilize Tennessee statutory definitions, while felony drug convictions look to the state where the prior conviction took place to determine the length of incarceration possible under that state's own laws. If under the state's laws where the prior drug felony was committed, the defendant could have been incarcerated for a period longer than 1 year, then the defendant had committed a drug felony for the purposes of the statute. Additionally, a single instance of possession can lead to multiple indictments as long as there is an independent theory or circumstance that the defendant could have been indicted on for that single act of possession. For instance, a defendant could be indicted for a Class B, C, and E felony for a single act of possession as long as they possess the requisite prior felonies, for example, a crime of violence and drug-related felony, while illegally possessing a handgun. And finally, if the defendant is convicted on multiple counts for that single act of possession, those lesser-included counts must merge into the highest-level felony conviction. The legal reasoning behind these steps comes from a combination of both statutory language and case law demonstrating the interpretation and application of that statutory language.
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Our prices will normally meet internet prices. When I buy a guitar, I have to put my hands on the guitar neck. You can do that here. You can try your instrument before you ever put any money on it at all. And still, cheaper than what you could get online most of the time, at least master prices at worst. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard the first Friday of each month, exclusively on News Radio WGNS. Your host, J. Paul Newman.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable. Law enforcement needs the community's help in seeking justice. Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
Today, in our Cold Case Profile segment, we will highlight three separate homicide cases. They are the murders of Cedric Herbert, William Greg Hawkins, and Nathan Morgan. I will be joined in that segment by Detective Sergeant James Abbott of the Murfreesboro Police Department and former District Attorney General and my former co-host of this program, William C. Weitzel, Jr.
Please listen as we review an unsolved mystery in this month's Cold Case Profile.
On June the 15th, 2009, at 9:17 a.m., the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a frantic call. The nature of the call was a possible burglary at an apartment complex on East Northfield Boulevard. When officers arrive at the scene, they see that the apartment door had been kicked open. Inside, they meet the lady who had called the police. She told officers that she lived in the apartment and that earlier that morning, present in the apartment were herself, her small child, and Cedric Herbert. At about 8 a.m., she left the apartment and took her child to daycare. She went on to say that when she returned, she discovered the body of Cedric Herbert. The police investigate. They determine that 24-year-old Cedric Herbert had been shot to death. Police now believe that someone or a group of individuals forced their way into the apartment and shot and killed Cedric Herbert. Robbery may have been the motive. According to family members, Cedric Herbert had a large sum of money on him the day before the murder. Why he was killed remains a mystery. His killer or killers remain at large. Detective James Abbott of the Murfreesboro Police Department has reopened the investigation. He is now asking for your help. We are pleased to have with us today in the WGNS studios, Detective James Abbott. Detective Abbott, I'm always very careful when releasing information on any pending investigation, so I always leave the minute details to the investigators. Can you fill in the details regarding how Mr. Herbert happened to be in the apartment on Northfield Avenue that day?
Well, Mr. Herbert and the young lady that lived at the apartment just started seeing each other, and he'd come over earlier that morning, sometime around 2, 3 a.m. in the morning, to see her, and had fallen asleep on the couch. When she arrived home, she found him laying face down in the bedroom, suffering from multiple gunshots.
Tell us why you were taking another look into this case.
In these kind of investigations, you always kind of, especially on your cold cases, you go back. But as we like to sometimes say, we're past the CSI phase of these type of cases. Now it's getting these kind of cases out in front of the public and getting information from possible people that have heard things, or people that may have known information but was afraid to come forward then. They may now be more willing to come forward.
Are there any class of witnesses who you'd like to talk to, such as friends, co-workers, or other persons that might help you fill in the blanks?
Yes, we'd like to speak with any friends of Mr. Herbert's, any associates of Mr. Herbert's, co-workers, anyone, family, anybody who may have information about this or information about his activities were and what he was doing up to about 48 hours to 72 hours prior to the homicide would be very helpful. Also, we'd like to speak with anyone who may have just heard what is sometimes called street talk. It would be great to hear from those folks that may have heard something from just someone who may have said, I heard this from someone who heard this from someone who heard this from someone.
I know that you're a very experienced cold case detective and have worked some very good cases. What efforts has law enforcement made to get this case in the public's eye and ask for the public's assistance in solving this crime?
Again, we're doing this show this morning, which is a great tool, especially the local level, to maybe try to get the information out. And we're also working with our public information officer using social media, and we're going to try to get this out on the social media sites as well.
What can you tell us about Cedric Herbert or the apartment complex or anything that might help a listener think, oh, I remember when that happened?
The apartment complex is over on East Northfield, and it is near the intersection of Highland and East Northfield. Mr. Herbert was a gentleman that lived here in Murfreesboro. He lived actually out on Bradable Pike area, but he resided a lot with this young lady from what we understand now when he first started seeing her there at the apartment. But Mr. Herbert would oftentimes be seen with friends over on Academy Street and also around Eagle Street. So people may remember Mr. Herbert from those areas as well, Mr. Cedric Herbert.
If anyone has information regarding who killed Cedric Herbert, who should they contact and what phone number should they call?
They should contact myself or any member of the Murfreesboro Police Department, but the Murfreesboro Police Department's Criminal Investigation Division. They can call me, Detective James Abbott. My number is 615-893-2717, or they can also call our local Crime Stoppers.
Detective Abbott, we want to thank you for being here today, and we want to thank you for the job that you do.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
On the morning of October the 16th, 2015, Brandy Hawkins and her father, Greg Hawkins, were fishing near the Mona boat ramp in Rutherford County, Tennessee. After a few hours on the water, they decide to head back to shore. Brandy remains in the boat while her father exits to walk back to get the trailer. Brandy Hawkins loses sight of her father as he walks away and into the parking lot. The time is about 11 o'clock a.m. It is then that Brandy Hawkins hears what she believes to be gunshots. She rushes to the parking lot, and there she finds her father. Greg Hawkins has been shot, and it appears his truck has been burglarized. Greg Hawkins dies that day. This case remains unsolved. Greg Hawkins was a valuable member of the community. He was an engineer at the Nissan plant in Smyrna, Tennessee. But he was more than that. Greg Hawkins was a devoted Christian. He was a husband, a father, and a brother. His family and friends have suffered a tremendous loss. We are asking for your help. Law enforcement and the Hawkins family wants to know why he was killed, and they want to know who killed him. A large reward has been offered in this case. If you have any information regarding the murder of 53-year-old Greg Hawkins, please call the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office at 615-898-7770, or you can call Crime Stoppers at 615-893-STOP. Your call to Crime Stoppers is confidential.
The Rutherford County District Attorney's Show, featured on the Action Line the first Friday of each month. And now here's the host, retired Assistant District Attorney J. Paul Newman.
On May 22nd, 2010, Nathan Morgan Jr.
was visiting friends at 1401 Eagle Street here in Murfreesboro. Just after midnight, shots were fired into the crowd that was gathered in the front yard. Three people were struck by the gunfire. Lewis Sweeney of Nashville was treated at Middle Tennessee Medical Center for injuries to the neck and shoulder area. Byrus Hughes of Murfreesboro was also wounded and was treated and released at a local hospital. The third person shot was Nathan Morgan, Jr. Mr. Morgan was pronounced dead that night at Middle Tennessee Medical Center. Through the investigation, it was learned that one or more persons fired the shots from an outside area of the residence next door to 1401 Eagle Street. The weapon appears to have been a rifle, and multiple shots have been fired. Nathan Morgan, Jr. left behind a family that included his mother, his sister, and a daughter who misses him each and every day. Law enforcement and the family of Nathan Morgan, Jr. now ask for your help. Violent crimes will continue as long as good people remain silent. If you have any information regarding the murder of Nathan Morgan, Jr., asking for your help today is Detective James Abbott of the Murfreesboro Police Department. You can contact Detective Abbott by calling 893-2717, or you can call Crime Stoppers at 893-STOP. Detective Abbott, in listening to my presentation of the case summary, are there any facts that I need to correct or any facts that you would like to include for the public's consideration?
Based on the statements and information gathered and corroborating evidence that we have, we know that there are some other facts out there that we now know. One of these is being that we do have a person of interest who has been identified and has been identified through corroborating evidence and information and statements given by individuals. We know that there was a phone call or a series of phone calls made before the shooting and after the shooting. And we believe that these phone calls that the individual discussed the shooting, those are facts of the case that we need people to hear about and try to generate more leads and get those people who received those phone calls to come forward.
Can you describe cooperation of the public in general during this investigation?
We received cooperation from the public. We would not be to this little point now without that cooperation, knowing that there was these phone calls made and that pointed us into the direction we needed to obtain the evidence, corroborate all this information. We feel that these people probably or someone has talked about what the conversations were to other people, and we're needing them to come forward.
Can you describe for us the cooperation you received from the family during the investigation?
The family has been very supportive. They understand that this is a process. Sometimes it can be a long process, but at the same time, it's gone on too long, and they're wanting closure. I understand that and feel for a family who has to go through this. They've been very supportive. Anything that we've needed, any type of assistance, they do everything they can to help us, and they understand that, again, this is a long process, and they understand that sometimes our priorities are taken away on other more immediate cases, but again, and they know that we will refocus back on this case. Ms. Pringle and me, myself, we discuss this case. We talk about it probably monthly, sometimes even weekly. So she'll call me, or if I have some new information, I will call her. And that's really good to have her still communicating, still staying in touch with us about the case.
Also, while I was preparing and going on the internet, it was quite easy, and I recommend for the listening audience, if they want more information, to go on the internet, and if you simply put Nathan Morgan Jr. in as a Google search, you'll come up with several articles that were published in the paper. You'll also find YouTube videos, and I saw one that where you were the featured person. Can you tell us how you set that up?
Yes, we did a reenactment, which is part of a Crime Stoppers commercial, which ran here in Rutherford County, which can still be seen on YouTube. And when we did the reenactment, we also held a press conference with some of the local TV media outlets here in the area. So we try to get that information out through the press conference, through you still have it on YouTube and other various outlets. Also, we periodically continue to talk to people in the community or in the neighborhood where this occurred, trying to get some information, trying to put it back out there in front of people, because we want to keep it out there in front of people. Because this is a case that we believe, based on information and evidence that we've already obtained, we believe that these phone calls were made. We just need to find those people that talked to this individual, or individuals that talked to these people, friend, family member, anybody
who will come forward and talk to us. This is a case, I believe it is solvable. With the right one or two people that would come forward, this case could be, I believe, in front of a grand jury very quickly. So this is not just a case where we're just sitting here and we have no clue whatsoever. Like I said, it is a very solvable case, I feel, if the right people will come forward.
I believe General Weitzel may have a couple of questions for you.
Paul, you know this. James, I know you know. It's very important on these cases as they get age on them. We want people to know that we don't forget about them. And as you mentioned, it is very important for the family to keep in touch and also for us to keep in touch with the families. We've got somebody out there that's a murderer. And I know people are sometimes fearful. They're afraid if they give information or something that something may happen to them. And certainly I can understand that. But we need people to come forward and put a violent person behind bars. If this person is arrested and charged and convicted, everybody knows that. And hopefully it would make somebody think twice about taking a human life. And so it's dedication on the part of the police and the investigators, but it's also a dedication on the part of our citizens to be a part of the process, because without them, we cannot pursue, arrest, and prosecute these cases. And they're responsible just as much in a way as the police are for making their community a safer place. So I would certainly urge anyone with any information on this or other cases to come forward.
And when we return, we will bring Larry Flowers to the WGNS microphones.
Forget those fluorescent lights and freezer burn. This ain't your average grocery run. Meet your farmer, talk a little livestock, and take home the juiciest veggies in your life. The Rutherford County Farmers Market, celebrating 50 seasons.
At Lane Agri Park in Murfreesboro.
Real food, real people, and real local.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. We really focus on value. They get value. They get more than what they pay for. They get a higher level service. They get higher level food at a price that is a lot more affordable. What we're trying to do is we're trying to give people the value, and again, that they were fulfilled both within their stomach and as well as their pockets. We want them to feel satisfied. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
FM 1019. FM 100.5. WGNSradio.com, the Good Neighbor Network.
Larry Flowers is the public information officer for the Murfreesboro Police Department. I have known Larry for many years. I first met Larry when he was a TV news reporter. Larry Flowers is a person of great integrity and professionalism. I was so impressed with Larry's great TV skills. He was a one-man show. He could run the camera, do the interview, and edit the tapes. We welcome Larry Flowers to our WGNS microphones. Welcome, Larry.
Good morning, J. Paul.
Larry, can you tell us, does the Murfreesboro Police Department, they have an unsolved homicide, or what some people may call a cold case unit?
Around the PD, like to call them unsolved cases, because when you mention cold case to a victim's family, that's kind of harsh. And they don't want to think of their loved one's case, you know, in a box in a property room. So we try to refer to them as unsolved cases. And basically, we want to make sure that these family members know we're in pursuit of solving their case, each and every one of them, even though some of the tips have stopped coming in, witnesses are not cooperating, or whatever the case may be. And we do feature those on our webpage. You know, simply go to murfreesborotn.gov/police and go under our department, and it has a link for those unsolved cases.
Can you tell us how Crime Stoppers works? How does it function?
Crime Stoppers is basically governed by a board of private citizens. There were a group of citizens here in Rutherford County that felt the need that we needed something like this, so where folks can send in tips anonymously. And so these community leaders basically created Crime Stoppers. We partner with Crime Stoppers at Murfreesboro Police, and all the law enforcement agencies within Rutherford County makes up a Rutherford County Crime Stoppers. And so basically people can report tips anonymously. The board offers up to $1,000 reward for information that will lead to an arrest in a case. Not necessarily that they're going to get $1,000, but up to $1,000 depending on the person we're looking for. So that's typically how Crime Stoppers work.
One of the things about Crime Stoppers that often bothered me was that the amount has been $1,000 ever since I can remember. And one of the things that I looked into was, why is it $1,000? And what I found out was that IRS had agreed that if the amount is $1,000 or less, then it is tax-free. So I encourage our legislatures to possibly get that law changed so that we can up that amount a little bit.
Exactly.
Would you agree with that?
I totally agree, because, you know, money talks. And if you offer a little more money, especially in today's times where inflation is through the roof, somebody may need that extra money just to pay a bill. So I would definitely encourage our lawmakers to consider that.
Tell us now about the P3 Global app and how the public can get that app.
Sure. Rutherford County Crime Stoppers has partnered with P3 Global Intel app. Citizens can report crime tips, submit videos in real time using that app for Crime Stoppers. And again, it's called the P3 Global Intel app. You can go to your Apple ISO or your Android devices. Just go to the Google Play Store, download that particular app. There are a few steps you have to follow. You can actually click on whatever law enforcement agency you want to report that tip to. So in this case, Murfreesboro Police. Or you can do Rutherford County Sheriff's Office if you have a tip for Luverne Police. And typically what that will do is send an alert. You can report this anonymously. You don't have to even sign in your name on the app. You can literally click anonymously. And then, of course, the way Crime Stoppers work, you get a code. And that code you would use to typically collect your money. And so this P3 Global Intel app is just a modern way of reporting crime, other than just picking up the phone, leaving an anonymous tip.
I'm a big fan of Crime Files, and I know that you've had a big part in that, and you brought so much talent there, and also you organized talent to assist you. Can you tell us about the Crime Files?
Sure. MPD Crime Files, when I was in Jackson, Mississippi, working for the NBC affiliate there, we constantly did reenactments of crime. You know, Sergeant Abbott just gave you an update of several cases, but when you see those cases and see how that crime went down, typically our hope and our goal is for someone to see that and it sparks a memory. It's like, oh, I remember that. I remember seeing this crime, and then maybe call in a tip. But what Murfreesboro Police partners with Murfreesboro City TV, our producer and videographer Michael Nevels work closely with us. What we do is we will get actors from or actresses from Murfreesboro Little Theater, and they will come and play a part of the victims. Typically, the suspect, we like to use a police officer. So in that case, to recreate these crimes. And so we do have them listed on our website.
Larry, I want to commend you for the outstanding service that you've provided the Murfreesboro Police Department and this community.
Thank you.
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website. As we end our program today, we thank WGNS for providing the airtime. And we thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave now by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my two co-hosts, Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch, this is J. Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.